Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to this edition of the Hagmann and the Hagmann Report. We're so fortunate to have with us Liz Crokin, a woman I admire for her strength, a woman who is a tremendous journalist, in my opinion, in my view, one who breaks stories that other people don't have the guts to break. She addresses the issues without fear, and yet here she is, a victim herself, but not playing the victim. You've got to understand, folks, what we're facing here, in my view anyway, and I'm so grateful that Liz has agreed to remain with us for a little bit longer. I think what we're facing here is much greater than anything we've seen before, and it's ratcheting up. And Liz is she's in the crossfire, getting caught in the crossfire, and direct fire. And as a number, as we all are, include especially the conservative outlets, obviously, the conservative media. Liz, thanks for holding.
Absolutely.
Man, I'll tell you something. I got to ask you a question. John, our program director, is on with us as well. You've talked to him, right? You know him.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, all right. John, are you there, brother?
Yes, Doug, I am, and thank you so much for giving me just this quick opportunity to jump in momentarily. Liz, thank you for holding over, and I won't take but a moment of your time. I was actually buying a suit, Doug, getting ready for Chicago as I listened to Liz during hour two. And, you know, I just have a couple things I want to say to Liz and to all of the listeners and viewers here this evening. First of all, Liz, you have the backing of the Hagmann and Hagmann Report 110%. I know producers all the way across the landscape of internet radio. Doug and I will put together a strategic battle plan, and we will help you continue to get this word out. So you have our backing 100%. I wanted to say that to you, first of all, Liz.
Oh, that's so sweet. I'm going to, like, cry. It's like music to me.
Yeah, I'm feeling a little emotional, too. And as I said a moment ago, I'm just going to be very brief here. The other thing I wanted to say is something happened, Liz, while you were on the air during hour two. And again, folks, our guest this evening is Liz Crokin. You can find her at townhall.com. Liz, my phone has been blowing up from regular guests. I won't name names, but people that we do business with regularly telling me that they're praying for you, that they're in tears. You've really hit a nerve tonight, sister.
Wow. Thank you. I'm seriously, like, holding back tears. I actually, like, oh my God, I've been, like, crying all day because I'm losing jobs because of my work with, like, sex trafficking, and it's really frustrating, you know? I feel like we're living in this twilight zone where, you know, people that are trying to do good things and, like, help children, you know, are attacked and getting blacklisted, and it's just been a really lonely journey, even though I know there's other people that have experienced you know the same things I am, but it's thank you so much. You have no idea, like, how much that means to me, because I have faced so many obstacles these past 5 years in my personal life and professional life, so it means the world to me.
Well, Liz, it means the world to us as well. And folks, I want to emphasize in the last moment I'm going to take on air here this evening with our very special guest, Liz Crokin, it takes a lot of guts to do what Liz is doing right now, because so many women out in our listening audience and women who haven't even found the Hagmann and Hagmann Report platform yet are dealing with this, and they're suffering silently. And the last thing I want to say is, when I was growing up, this is hard for me to talk about, as a young man, I grew up with a single mom, and she dealt with sexual harassment that often resulted in her leaving at 4:30 in the morning employed and coming home that night without a job, okay? So as long as I produce this show, we will continue to defend the defenseless. We will, as I said, Doug Hagmann and I'm going to see him this week, and we're going to put together a battle strategy to help you, Liz. And lastly, I wanted to announce that I just received Doug and Joe through a back channel. This is a very reliable source. I will confirm it tomorrow. But there will be a consortium of people who have been on the front line of the global pedo-gate issue joining us in Gurnee, Illinois, this weekend at the Awaken to the Shaken conference. Folks, that's paulbagleyprophecy.com. Doug, I just received information, again, from an A-plus source that Craig Sawyer will be joining us in Chicago at the conference.
Wow. Okay.
That's awesome.
Fantastic, John. I really appreciate that. I just have, as I'm listening to Liz and hearing you, I just have to question, when is the salty discharge coming from my eyes? No, I'm kidding.
It's a little bit of a rough one, and I want to be clear about this. I'll make this my final comment, and I'll exit gracefully here, folks. Again, growing up as a little kid, my mom was the victim of real sexual harassment. She worked her butt off, and we had a lot of years where we had oatmeal and pancakes and stuff like that for dinner. And that's just what life was like. So when I see women victimized this way, when I see little kids victimized, it straight up pisses me off. And if people don't like the language at this point, too bad. Bottom line is this. The Hagman and Hagman Report will continue to defend the defenseless. We will continue to stand in the gap, shoulder to shoulder, with journalists and with brave warriors like Liz Crokin and like our first hour guest, Lauren, who put her job and livelihood on the line to bring that story to you folks. As long as I'm the producer of this show, Doug and Joe, Liz Crokin, we will not back down. God bless all three of you, and I'm going to say goodnight.
Thank you so much.
You know, Liz, I'm going to tell you right now, you do have our backing, and we will work night and day, seriously, to make sure that you are not silenced. Just not only your personal situation, but your investigative findings are not for naught. And that's so important because you've done so much. Just today, before you came on, I was rereading. What you wrote for Town Hall back in February and early March, and I was looking for a follow up. Now I understand why there is none.
Yeah, exactly.
That's shameful. That's shameful. You know. Okay.
Yeah, it's frustrating.
Yeah, it's got to be. Now, where are we? Do you think, Liz, in the greater scheme of things, with respect to the PedoGate, PizzaGate, whatever people are calling it or want to call it, or whatever people know it by, where are we right now with the investigation? In your view, are we making headway? We, as independent journalists, and the government.
Well, the good news is that I track PedoGate news every single day, and I track all the arrests, and it seems like they're still making high-profile arrests, and they're still making high-profile arrests. Since the last time I spoke with you guys, there was a former NYPD police chief who was arrested for, the sexual exploitation of children. That's huge, okay? And that explains why people like me can't get police to prosecute sexual predators who assault people like me. When you have people at the top, they're supposed to be going after these monsters who are monsters themselves. Well, that's why we're not seeing any action. So I was really happy when that arrest took place because, we're getting closer to the head of the snake. I'm going to say New York City police chief. And I also thought it was interesting that it was a New York City police chief because we know that the New York PD has Anthony Weiner's computer, which allegedly has the content of horrifying, examples and videos and evidence of sex trafficking. So I think we're still making headway. I will say, though, that I've been discouraged that there hasn't been a more prominent and more high-profile arrest. A politician, like another Dennis Hastert. I have been a little discouraged by that, but I do believe, and I still have faith, and I'm praying that those arrests will take place, and like I mentioned earlier, President Trump's on this. I truly believe that President Trump is going after these pedophiles, and again, like I said earlier, he did an interview with Fox's Eric Bolling, and he said, the news story today is that he's starting to build the wall, and he said, building the wall, nobody talks about this, but it will help end human trafficking. Okay, this is at the forefront of his mind. He's talked about it over and over again. Melania's talked about it a little bit. She went, I believe it was Easter weekend, to a facility where there's women and abused children. And it was reported somewhere that she discussed the sex traffic and stuff. I don't know if that report was accurate. But regardless, you know, this president is on this, and so is his administration. So I think that we'll continue to see more arrests. I would love to see more high-profile arrests, but I'd love to see one soon, because I'm really sick of people, you know, discrediting Pizzagate, discrediting Pedogate, discrediting the movement, when it's so obvious that this is a huge problem and that this is real and this is, you know, going on. So, I think we're still moving in the right direction. It's just, justice is so slow. It's moving at a snail's pace, and that's just the way the system is, right? I mean, look at me. I've been fighting, yeah. You know, the sexual predator that destroyed my life for almost five years.
When I say I know what you're going through, I really don't know what you're going through on the assault side, but I know what you're going through on the legal side, because we are in the crosshairs. I personally am in the crosshairs. Steve Quayle is personally in the crosshairs of somebody who referenced our Pizzagate coverage, and I'm limited as to what I can say, but I can tell you this. Lawfare, I can't even talk about it, but I can just say
I understand.
You know what I mean? It's absolutely incredible. And you know, it's amazing because Wikipedia comes out, not that they're a source or anything like that, but if people research Pizzagate, it's a debunked conspiracy theory. You know, how in the world can they say that? Look at the mountain of evidence. And evidence is what I would call it. And you as a journalist, I'm sure, right, you would agree that there's sufficient documentation behind these allegations to warrant investigation.
There was some journalist recently who, you know, tweeted, Pizzagate's been thoroughly debunked. And I tweeted that journalist and I said, if Pizzagate's been thoroughly debunked, can you please explain to me what a handkerchief with a pizza-related map means? And can you explain what pasta means and walnut sauce? No one can explain it. You know, of course, that journalist just, you know, responded and called me names, typical liberal comeback. But no one can, you know, it's allegedly been debunked, but I am still yet to hear one explanation of what all these crazy words mean. No one can explain it. It hasn't been debunked. You know, it's so frustrating. It's so frustrating.
Amen. It really is. Liz, you've been so kind and generous with your time. We don't want to keep you longer than we're just so grateful that you are still fighting the fight. You've got John's assurances, mine personally as well, and every member of the audience. How can people contact you? Through social networking, correct?
You can find me on Twitter at LIZCROKIN, Liz Crokin. And then I'm on Facebook. You can email me, liz@lizcrokin.com. You know, I try to respond to every message I get. I get a lot of messages from sex crime victims. You know, sex crime victims really need to support each other and stick together, because it's really hard for someone that hasn't been the victim of a sex crime to understand what the sex crime victims go through. So I have a lot of really close friends that, you know, have been victimized, sexually assaulted or abused, sexually, you know, molested as kids. And we all kind of stick together. So, you know, anyone that's, you know, going through something similar, you know, feel free to reach out to me. I'm here to support you. You can find me on Twitter, Facebook too. I'm on Facebook. Okay. And I think I'm the only Liz Crokin on Facebook, but I'm constantly posting about sex trafficking, pedo-gate, you know, all these issues. And I appreciate, you know, people's support. And, you know, hopefully next time we talk, I'll, you know, have a new venue where I can write about sex trafficking without, you know, the fear of being blacklisted. So...
it's going around lately, I'll tell you that. That's the third rail of journalism, apparently, or at least the mainstream journalism is talking about this. But you've got more courage than anyone I know.
Oh, that's really sweet. Yeah, it's really scary. But at the end of the day, you know, if enough people speak out against this, then they're not going to be able to silence us all. You know, they're not.
Amen.
So we just have to keep fighting the good fight.
Liz, we absolutely love you.
So much. I love you guys too. And like, seriously, I mean, you guys are one of the few people in the media that are actually like covering this, and I'm just so grateful to be on the show and that you guys are shedding light on these horrors, because so few people are. So God bless you guys, and you know, you guys keep up the good fight as well, and I appreciate you guys giving me this platform to talk about these really important issues.
Well, we appreciate you immensely. Liz Croken, thank you. Thank you, thank you. And
right,
we'll
guys.
Be in touch.
You're welcome.
All right, God
okay.
bless.
Have a great
thank
night.
Thank you so much. All right, guys, take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Folks, that was Liz Croken. And look, I'm going to tell you something. I'm going to speak to you from the heart here for a second. And Joe, you're somewhat aware of this. Look, you know, we're going to be in Gurnee, Illinois, and this Friday and Saturday, which is just north of Chicago. And I've been compiling all of my research, over 1,200 pages. 1,200. From you just don't. I'm tongue-tied. 1,200 pages. It's grown, and I've looked at the various. I've looked at pretty much everything public, everything open source. I've seen. I've talked to the same sources I believe are feeding Eric Prince, have fed Eric Prince information. Talked to some NYPD sources. I've talked to some law enforcement sources other than NYPD. Some people connected with the Department of Justice with respect to the Anthony Weiner situation. There are a lot of angry people out there. And not unrelated, Joe and I spent Sunday with Russ Dizdar. And there's a satanic element built into this. Of course, the spirit cooking aspect of this. You know what Liz Croken went through? And if you don't know her whole story, it's battery. It's assault and battery. She's the victim of assault and battery. A horrendous assault. It's really pretty clear cut. And oh, I know, you could say, well, he said, she said. No, not when you look, peel back the layers and see what the evidence is, what the documentation is. And here's the thing. We have conservatives, and a lot of, in fact, my wife asked me, and then I'm going to turn this over to Joe. My wife asked me, she said, why are you so angry? Because I don't show her any of this documentation. She might come into the office and work in the office, but she doesn't see what I see, what we see. What makes me angry, very consistent parallel with Liz Croken, is the very people who are supposed to be standing for right, for good, against evil, are silent. And by your silence, it is your silence, in my view, it is tantamount to acquiescence and giving the other side permission, giving the evil permission to invade. And that angers me. And then I see these people who take cheap shots, absolutely cheap shots, calling themselves Christians, calling themselves journalists, calling themselves conservatives, and you take cheap shots at the very people who are trying to do what's right and expose what's taking place. And then you've got a bunch of people who just make fallacious, fictitious, reckless, in my opinion, accusations against others that serve only to distill the legitimate complaints or to negate the legitimate complaints of sexual harassment, of sexual assault. It's a fight. Look, I know many of our listeners, and I know the many women who listen to this program are victims of sexual assault, are victims of some of the most horrendous things that you can imagine. Psychological abuse, physical abuse. I've gotten emails, I've gotten letters from them. You know, and it amazes me. And this is why I get angry. And this is why we have to fight back. We have to unite. And we, as Christians and as political or moral conservatives, however you want to term that, we have to unite. And we just can't say, you know, I'll be rooting for you. I'll be praying for you. Oh, that's appreciated. But we just can't stop there. In my view, we have to say enough is enough. And I admire people like Coach Dave Dobenmeyer. And if you haven't tuned into Coach Dave Dobenmeyer's program, Past Assault, Coach Dave Live, I mean, he's out there in the field. Because, folks, the murder of the unborn, 81 million, or 81, just a whole bunch. Blood is being shed. The murder of the unborn, the perversion of our values. We need to fight back. Coach Dave is on the front lines. Russ Dizdar is on the front lines on the spiritual side. Pastor David Langford on the front side, on the front, leading the charge too, on the spiritual side. And others, awakening people. You've got writer people like, guests that we've had on, and of course Ted Brewer, educating people, informing people. These are not people who sit by the wayside, sit in on the bench. These are players. They're in the game. They're playing, folks, if nothing else, I mean, this. By the way, the interview with Liz Croken, that wasn't scripted. None of that. I had no idea going into this interview where we were headed. Neither did Joe. No clue. And I got to tell you something. I'm worn out. I don't know about you, but I'm worn out. Because, and if she didn't touch your heart, and I've seen the stuff that's been printed about her, the garbage that's been printed. But see, I've seen it, and I've seen the accusations, and I've seen the names, you know, the names that she's been called. But didn't we tell you before, last week, that these accusations, by the way, the unfounded accusations, and I'm saying the unfounded accusations, were part of a larger tactic to shut down the conservative voices, the real investigators, the real journalists like Liz Croken? Didn't we say that? That's exactly what's happening. And she just put the exclamation point at the end of the sentence. Folks, we are in a war. What do we expect? We're in a war. That's what Coach Dave Dobenmeyer would say. We're in a war. What do you expect? And we are. Well, I know we're getting close to the break, but I just want to thank each and every one of you. Whatever you do, I ask that you support Liz Croken in her quest to really to be help her continue her exposure of this insane, sick, perverted criminal activity. Pray for her. Support her. Go on social networking and back her and make her elevate her visibility and tell her that you support her, that you heard her impassioned plea on our show. Or I don't care, but just let's get the word out there. But let's unify. Let's fight. It'd be too easy just to say, screw it, I'm done. I'm not going to do that. And I know you're not either. We can band together and we can make a difference. We can make a difference. We can. Joe, I'm telling you,
absolutely.
We can. Go ahead.
Absolutely we can. We're coming up against our final break of the evening. And when we come back, we're going to hit on a number of interesting news stories. Something Ted Brewer has been talking about on our show the last few times he's come on has been picked up by the Wall Street Journal and a number of other sites. Jared Kushner did not disclose business dealings with George Soros. It goes to talk about that billion-dollar loan. We're going to get into that and more on the other side, so don't go anywhere. You're listening to this edition of the Hagman & Hagman Report.
Visit HagmanReport.com for the news and articles that matter most. Stay tuned. We will be right back.
Shall be great tribulation, such as was not since the beginning of the world to this time. No, nor ever shall be.
Folks, I'm going to direct your attention to MasterPreps.com. MasterPreps.com. Wow. MasterPreps.com, the sponsor of our show, MasterPreps.com. That's MasterPreps.com. Take a visit there. High-quality items, made-in-America items. I mean, anything, everything you possibly want, from cooking utensils, cooking frying pans. It'll blow you away. Absolutely, Eric said.
It's insane. I mean, wow. Look at the products.
Folks, visit MasterPreps.com. Again, welcome to the Hagman & Hagman Report family. MasterPreps.com. I mean, wow. It's insane.
MasterPreps.com. Are you ready for what comes next?
Hi, I'm Grace Gonzalez from Trading Post in the Woods. We are an American family-owned company founded and built on skills and knowledge gained from responding to 18 major disasters in the U.S. and around the world. We found that most people don't have enough food and water to survive, let alone any medicinals to save their life. We are offering 25% off our must-have American Heritage Remedies Kit. It contains 12 homeopathic remedies, a booklet that goes over everything in your kit, and our brand new book, Major Disasters Lessons Learned. Just enter coupon code HAGMAN. In life or a disaster, you must be able to take care of yourself. You may not be a medical doctor, and your grandmother and your great-grandmother probably weren't either, but they still knew how to minister to their family's health issues, and so can you. Check out our American Heritage Remedies Kit at www.changelessandwoods.com. Your life may depend on it.
Hello, everyone. This is Joe Charles, the guy whose voice is heard announcing for the Hagman & Hagman Report right here on YouTube and across the Global Star Radio Network. There have been many people wondering whose music is being played during those breaks. Well, you guessed it. And we're very pleased to announce that all that music and 11 brand new songs from the CD New Jerusalem is set for release on April 10th for download on iTunes. That means you can help support my ministry and be blessed by this awesome, inspiring recording. I have been fortunate to work with some phenomenal musicians from around the world that helped us put this recording together in the studio. Simply go to joecharlesmusic.com and click on the iTunes link. Or, if you'd rather have a CD, we'll send one right out to you. Just leave me your email and we'll get right back to you. And thanks to Doug and Joe Hagman for making this all possible. God bless.
Welcome
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to our final segment on this edition of the Hagman and Hagman Report. Before we get back to our show, I want to bring you a word from one of our sponsors, MinutemanStove.com. They offer the Minuteman Rocket Stove and a number of other very important items that will make times and will make dangerous and uncertain times much more sustainable when you have a backup method for accomplishing one of life's most important daily tasks, preparing food. You always need a way to cook and a way to boil water. Well, check out the Minuteman Rocket Stove and all the accessories and things that go with it. This is a 1/8 inch steel reinforced ammo can that has been created for you to use the smallest amount of wood and with a burner on it to basically cook food, boil water, have a portable stove wherever you go. And there's fire starters. Go to MinutemanStove.com. You can check out their fire starters as well as some of their other equipment that they have on there. And this is a great product. We've tested it out. We've used it. It's very durable, and it works very well. That's MinutemanStove.com, MinutemanStove.com.
You know, one of my favorite sponsors, too. The stove itself is just fantastic. And, man, I'm not a camper kind of guy, okay? Motel 6 is about as rough as I want to go, or Super 8, you know? But the stove itself makes life a lot easier. And I actually used the Minuteman stove it's a long story, but I ended up cooking coffee on it. So, anyway, folks, boy, I'll tell you, talk about being...
What are you looking at over there? No, it's the...
Oh,
the
yeah,
gifts
no,
or whatever.
You know how these... These things pop up on your screen. That's my story, and I'm sticking to it.
Mm-hmm. Look, we got to... I want to bring up this story. I wanted to bring this up with Liz. This is from a few days ago, and it really did not get much attention in the mainstream media. Milo Yiannopoulos, he picked this up from April 27th. Social justice warrior columnist. Why do we punish people who give others AIDS?
Wow.
In a column for the Sacramento Bee, writer Erica Smith declares that threatening to punish people for transmitting HIV does absolutely nothing for public health. The piece, titled "The AIDS Crisis is Over, Why Are People Still Going to Jail Over HIV?" states that in California, more than 30 other states, dozens of laws remain on the books to punish people who willfully expose others to HIV. It continues to this day. People still get charged with felonies over HIV and go to prison for 5, 10, or even 20 years. In some states, those convicted must register as a sex offender for life. Smith goes on to state that these laws are not compassionate, caring, or tolerant towards people with HIV or AIDS. Instead, she argues, they are fear-based holdovers from the days of the gay plague. Smith goes on to praise Senate Bill S-239, that would greatly reduce the penalties for transmitting HIV. This Senate Bill 239 would repeal two felony offenses for people who deliberately pass along HIV and reduce two others to a misdemeanor, just like the intentional transmission of every other infectious or communicable disease, she writes, further arguing that the reasoning for the bill is pretty plain. One that is threatening to punish people for transmitting HIV does absolutely nothing for public health. It only encourages people to hide their status or not get tested at all. You can't be charged with infecting someone with something you didn't know you had. It's time to be compassionate, caring, wow, or tolerant, Smith concludes. It's time to end the cycle. And as you might expect, many people online have not received Smith's column very well. Paul Joseph Watson took to Twitter, putting this tweet out, HIV is now progressive. Only bigots get upset if their partner gives it to them on purpose.
I have a problem with this.
This mindset is just so...
Haven't we gone down a really... Joe, let me ask you this. And by the way, folks, we can't have open lines tonight, or it wouldn't be prudent, because we're having some technical issues, and we apologize for that. So, sorry about that. But haven't we gone down this road? I believe
not like this.
Well, okay. The door opened. If you follow the path, and many of the conservatives, the true conservatives and Christians, said, you know, you legalize or erroneously state the legalization, for example, of homosexual marriage, which is, there's so many things wrong with that phrase. But you get the idea. Pretty soon, people are going to want to marry their iPhones, and then mm-hmm. or a pig. Okay.
Mm-hmm. I mean, you already have we talked about Rachel Dossal, the transracial person. She was born a blonde-haired, blue-eyed woman, and now identifies as black after she got a tan and put some curls in her hair. And you have, you know, a father who I think it was 46 years old is now identifying as a 6-year-old. You know, basically in diapers. You have it's just crazy. We went over to social justice. A piece the other day that talked about, you know, how safe spaces are basically going back to what happened during segregation, and how the social justice warrior movement has done nothing but push real civil rights issues back, right. You know, 100 years, 50 to 100 years.
Right.
And that's right on the money. It's idiocracy. It is a complete abandonment of all common sense that we see with this mindset. And, you know, I've seen a lot of slogans or phrases that have been picked up and shared, you know, one of them being that, you know, the progressives, the social justice warriors, only react to feelings, and that's why we see, you know, this lack of common sense, this airheadedness. It is a mental illness. It has to be described as a mental illness, because this is a group, the progressives, the left, the social justice warriors, who promote you know, what their name is, social justice. They believe that the minority, whether it's transgender minority, racial minority, have special rights and privileges above the rest of the citizens. They believe that they're in some kind of protected class that deserves to be elevated above the rest of the people in the United States. And that's something that is dangerous in itself to believe, but when it's reinforced by the authority of the government and the media in this country, it's basically giving people a license to be retarded. And I don't mean retarded as in mental illness, I mean as a lack of common sense, willingly abandoned.
Social retardation.
Yeah.
And intellectual and all across the board retardation. I agree with that. I agree.
Nothing against those who are mentally challenged
it's a different use of the word.
Absolutely. It's just amazing to me to see. And even me and my wife were talking about this. Since Trump's election, really since October of last year, how fast we've seen this agenda progress. And
very
some
much.
Of the, how insane it has gotten. You know, from Bill Nye's new show on Netflix. And these are just small examples of a much broader problem in this country and parts in the, more in the Western world than anywhere else.
You know, look at, in my personal opinion, Samantha Bee, for example. I don't know how many people know who she is, but she's the most crass, foul-mouthed, unfunny.
She's not
funny. I don't even know what you'd call her, but except the just wow.
She's got a TV show on
Full
TBS.
Frontal.
Yeah, that's the name.
She hosted this. Awards dinner, or not the what was the press club? Not the press club dinner. She hosted
the correspondence dinner.
Right. She hosted a show called not the White House correspondence dinner. People might think I just had a stroke there, but no, that was the name of the episode, and the venom from her and others. It's becoming much more evident, and we're seeing this. And you know, the other thing too that runs hand in hand with the left progressive communist venom, and I refer to this again, the unholy alliance between the communists and the Muslims in this country, which makes absolutely no sense.
No, it doesn't. But it's there.
There, and folks, one of our stomping grounds, shall we say, or one of the areas that we've done a lot of investigation in, is upstate New York, western New York, including Buffalo, Rochester. And of course, throughout New York State. But just recently, as a matter of fact, this was just reported by the local station WIVB, and I don't know how many people have followed this or know about this, but there were, of course, after 130 people were killed back in November of 2015 in the coordinated attacks in Paris, ISIS promised very similar bloodshed on big cities in the United States. For example, Boston, Chicago, New York. Well, during the FBI investigation, and this is one that was not sullied by or peppered by, this is a legitimate investigation as far as I can tell. They found a guy out of Rochester, Emmanuel Lutchman, a convicted terrorist sympathizer. Lutchman, of course, wanted a replay of the Paris, at least one part of the Paris attacks, the terrorist attacks, and he set his sights on the Merchant's Grill, a place that we frequented. So when you think, for example, that terrorism, it's not going to happen to us, it's not going to happen here, what happened in Paris is going to, it's only in Europe. Folks, let me tell you something. It's the level of Islamic infiltration in this country is much deeper than people understand, and the coordination between ISIS sympathizers or Muslim terrorists and MS-13, as crazy as it sounds, exists. You've got a lot of operatives, MS-13, ISIS operatives on Long Island, some say upwards of 250-300, according to FBI, that we're talking about active FBI surveillances.
Yeah, I've read a lot about how MSM on Long Island, in parts of New Jersey and Maryland, have just this huge influx of MS-13, and MS-13-affiliated people. There have been, this spring, I remember two instances where MS-13 gang members targeted other teenagers who lived in the geographical area and murdered them for perceived slights against them. It wasn't even for anything, they didn't steal a soda pop from them or call them a derogatory name. I think the one was just a funny look.
They will kill you, and this is not an overstatement. They will kill you just because.
It's part of a gang initiation, too.
From that to crossing their path, for example, it doesn't matter. I have to say that we're seeing on the statistics side in cities like Chicago, for example, Baltimore coming up very heavy in the homicide rates.
Oh yeah, did you see that their homicide rates are higher than they've been in 30 years, I believe, or ever? And the same leadership that told the federal government and the FBI to they didn't need any help, they didn't want their help, are now asking for the feds to come back in and help get their murder rate under control, because it is, I think it's it just reached a milestone.
This goes already for this year. Goes to the refugees and immigrants in that area. You cannot. No, go ahead. Baltimore.
Well, I don't know that Baltimore. That the problem is. I mean, from what I understand, the problem there is uncontrolled gang populations and their access to guns.
MS-13 as well.
Absolutely. And this is kind of unrelated, but I'm gonna touch on this since it just came to my mind. Maybe somebody else has heard something about this. In Chicago and in Baltimore, there were stories in separate months about locals there finding crates, unopened wooden crates, full of automatic weapons, like somebody just left them there.
I was looking for those.
No, but it was just a weird story. I don't know why it came to mind right now. Probably because we're talking about the crime and the murder rate in these cities, the shootings in Chicago. This is something that's been covered in the mainstream for a number of years now. You have 14 shootings in a weekend, 10 killings, 20 people shot. It seems like every holiday now, whether it's Memorial Day or July 4th or Labor Day, they're setting new records in Chicago for the amount of violence that happens in 1 or 2 day periods of time. You have, children that are being caught in the crossfires and killed almost on a daily basis in some of these cities.
That's right.
And yet, these are gun-free zones. mind you, gun-free zone.
Go figure.
And it's just, you know, it's a cultural problem. As much, the problem stems far beyond guns. It's like trying to say that the latest increase in terrorist attacks that have where terrorists have used vehicles in their assaults, it's like saying vehicles should be banned. The vehicles aren't the problem. The guns aren't the problem. It's the people who are the problem, and that's just a basic common sense understanding of it. And what's going on in these societies? What's going on in these cultures that are causing this? Now in Baltimore, you know, they said it was police harassment and over policing that was causing a lot of the violence. Now they're saying that, you know, now that the police aren't doing their jobs or are not responding to calls in these cities the way they used to, now it's the lack of policing that is causing the problems. It seems like the police are in an impossible situation. You know, they're racist if they over-police, they're racist if they don't police, and it's all their fault anyway.
It's a horrible situation to be in that, and I can see, yeah, and I agree with what you're saying. You know, this leads me kind of into thinking, or into this, Rudge reported on this, or WorldNet Daily, WND. You know, Michael Savage continues to be banned from Britain. And, I saw that. You know, people kind of chuckle at that.
I do. And he's been banned since we've been listening to him.
Right. 8 years now. 8 years he's still banned. But here is what I believe the salient point about this. If they can ban Michael Savage from Britain, they can ban Doug Hagman, Joe Hagman, they could ban Eric the Tech, they can ban John Robertson, but they can ban you by your Facebook postings, your social networking postings. That's where this is headed. If you... And I've received a lot of professional journals, for example, investigative journals, because of our profession. I get them and I receive them. And there's trends taking place right now. The trends among NGOs, the government NGOs, and some major corporations are what a lot of companies are doing. They are collecting the information from social networking sites about your political views. They are in turn turning that information over to, they're sharing it with agencies of the United States government. Now think about this for a minute, okay? For example, how can I explain this very quickly? Okay, because we're licensed investigators, because I own an investigative company, or operate an investigative company, you have to pass a background check, and you are then allowed access to a fee-based proprietary database that gives you the ability to input a name, name and address, whatever it might be, and then get a return of very personal information on the individual that you're looking for. So for example, if I want to do a background check on somebody my daughter's dating, I can do that. Okay, I can get a whole list of, you know, everything. And yes, I have done that. But you know, but here's the thing: these same database repositories are collecting information, and other agencies are doing the same thing. And other companies, they're collecting this information, and they're incorporating the postings on social networking and giving it to the government. Ultimately, there's a couple of steps in between, but ultimately the government gets that. Or other countries have access to that. It is trending very heavily. And
that's just one of the ways that the information is given. You have the internet service providers giving, you know, your search history to the government and selling it to advertising companies. You have the search engines, the individual search engines, whether it's Google or Yahoo, selling information, your personal information, to advertising companies, to governments, to data mining firms. And I saw an interesting article today, and I think it's still up here, on Drudge. It's about Facebook criticized for analyzing teen feelings accused of giving information to advertisers.
Oh, I saw that. Yeah.
And then there's another one right underneath it. I'm an ex-Facebook executive. Don't believe what they tell you about ads. And
What's that supposed to mean?
Okay, this is what this guy tells
a little about ads.
This guy tells a story as an employee of Facebook. He says, for 2 years, I was charged with turning Facebook data into money by any legal means. If you browse the internet or buy items in physical stores and then see ads related to those purchases on Facebook, blame me. I helped create the first versions of that back in 2012. The ethics of Facebook's micro-targeted advertising was thrust into the spotlight this week by a report out of Australia. And this, there it goes. The article just
yep.
popped up around.
But well, you get the idea.
This is what happens. They're targeting, they're finding out, specifically with teenagers, what their emotions are, whether they're happy, angry, sad, depressed, insecure, worthless. I got it back up. And they said the article, based on a leaked presentation, said that Facebook was able to identify teenagers at their most vulnerable, including when they feel insecure, worthless, defeated, and stressed, in order to promote ads which they would be most susceptible to buying in that state of mind.
Think about that exploitation.
And how would they know, unless you posted on Facebook that you felt insecure or you felt worthless and use those words, how would they know what your state
of
mind is?
It's a huge business. I mean, a huge business out there. And you are the victims. Or being exploited. Victims, that might be it. You're being exploited.
Yeah,
Facebook. For profit.
Facebook claimed that this report was misleading, assuring the public that the company does not offer tools to target people based on their emotional state. If the intention of Facebook's public relations spin is to give the impression that such targeting is not even possible on their platform, I'm here to tell you they are lying through their teeth, says the former employer.
There it is.
Just as Mark Zuckerberg was being disingenuous when, in the wake of Donald Trump's unexpected victory, he expressed doubt that Facebook could have flipped the presidential election, Facebook deploys a political advertising sales team specialized by political party and charged with convincing deep-pocket politicians that they have to do the kind of influence needed to alter the outcome of the elections.
That's right.
This gentleman says he was at Facebook in 2012 during the previous presidential race. The fact that Facebook could easily throw the election by selectively showing a get-out-the-vote reminder in certain counties of a swing state, for example, was a running joke. Converting Facebook data into money is harder than it sounds, mostly because the vast bulk of your user data is worthless. Turns out that your blotto drunk party pics and flirty coworker messages have no commercial value whatsoever.
Wait. So, who's saying this?
This is the former employee
of
Facebook who helped create...
is he being disingenuous in state? Because
he's
warning about one aspect of
right,
this.
Right, right. And then he's making saying it was a joke in the other.
Okay, all right. Which concerns me.
But he goes on to say, occasionally, if the data is used very cleverly with lots of machine learning iteration and systematic trial and error, the canny marketer can find just the right admixture of age, geography. That's what my wife says. I always make geography. Oh my gosh, I'm gonna have to show this to her when I get back. She's gonna tear me up.
Geography.
There's two words. Nemesis. She mispronounces, and geography. She says it's geography.
How about simmonin? Or
I used to say not certificate, but certificate when I was little. I would get that messed up. But anyways, the marketer can find just the right admixture of age, geography, time of day, music, or film taste that show the demographic winner of an audience. The click-through rate, to use the advertiser's parlance, doesn't lie.
Well,
and when they say without even using the leaked documents and the leaked report that just came out, it's impossible to know precisely what the platform was offering to advertisers, but they know that they are looking at targeting emotions.
This is
something they call it psychometric targeting.
Yeah, and this is something that has. I really go back to the digitization of everything, in the influx of or the imposition and I use that word deliberately, of social media into our daily lives. They're taking this. This is really managing the human domain. I mean, you talk about Jade Helm. This is really mapping and managing the human mm-hmm. domain, the mind. And this is how, in my view anyway, this is how a lot of the artificial intelligence and the pseudo transhumanistic elements are going to be used against us. And a lot of it, remember the shopping cart, or keep in mind the customer loyalty cards. And I know I'm kind of going on a tangent here, but think about how we have been conditioned as a population. Use the customer loyalty card. It'll get you 5 cents off, maybe a percentage off your total grocery purchase. They, in turn, use that data. They market that data. They know it's conditioning. And that's even back 20 years ago, customer loyalty cards. And look how this has developed on a digitization, or with digitization, with respect to social media, or even Amazon, or any online, anything online.
And the article goes on to say that the hard reality is that Facebook will never try to limit such use of their data unless the public uproar reaches such a crescendo it has to be unmutable. And they go on to say an example of that. They said that happened with the Trump and fake news accusation, but I don't believe that it did.
Please, and folks, I'm going
to
end this.
Because when it comes to bringing, you know, taking money away from Facebook, it's going to take a lot more than public uproar, I imagine.
Well, it's going to take the government, you know, the government does fund a lot of station, mm-hmm. the Facebook initiatives and social media initiatives. But in closing, you mentioned fake news. And this is something that again, I've talked about before. We always talk about it. I think people need to be reminded, however, the phrase fake news in post-truth environment, the moving target that is that's being used to define fake news, we need to really pay attention to this, because it is going to be, I believe, a critical component in silencing the conservative voice out there, in silencing you and I, in assaulting and assailing Christianity. It's going to be used against conservatives, against the moral conservatives, and Christians, the Judeo-Christian ethic, and it's already taking place right now. It would look at, for example, fake news as it relates to Pizzagate. Exhibit A, for example, Liz Crokin. Do I need to say more? And folks, please pass the Liz Crokin segment. Everyone you know, and also Lauren P. Mm-hmm. with her
the
with
Chimera the, finding
yeah,
in the ICD-10.
Pass it to everyone you know.
All right. Until tomorrow, stay safe. God bless. Have a great evening. Check HagmanReport.com tomorrow for the news and the updated show information. I don't want to announce the guest, but it's going to be a great show tomorrow.
I don't want to jinx it. All right.
So until then, stay safe. God bless. Have a great evening. We'll be back tomorrow.